Jeff Nelson joins us on Sports Byline USA, former pitcher in the major leagues for 15 seasons with the Seattle Mariners, the New York Yankees, Texas Rangers, and also the Chicago White Sox. And he has not one, two, or three championship rings. He has four of those. And Jeff, the thing that always impresses me about professional athletes, anytime I see on their resume that they played double-digit years, I don't care what the sport is, that is impressive. When you think back about playing that long, what impresses Jeff Nelson about that?
I guess after I retire, I can look back and see how many years I played. I think that's the most incredible part. You know, all the work, I guess, you put in. You know, you work hard to play that long, and you don't take the game for granted. You don't take the guys for granted, and you always have to get better, and you try to stay healthy. I mean, there was times that I went on the DL, and I had some injuries, but you always bounce back from that and were able to, you know, come back strong and until you finally had one that put you out. But I think you look back and just, I mean, I think it's the game that I took serious, and I always wanted to stay around. It took a long time to get there, and I didn't want to end it quick.
You know, when you think about the mental and the physical aspect of being a professional athlete, I think it's obvious to me, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, the mental is so important. One, being able to focus day in and day out, but also as you get a little bit older, being able to adapt to the changes in your body and also the physical struggles that you just alluded to. Am I correct about the strength of the mental aspect of the game?
Yeah, because, you know, sometimes it's, They say, okay, even though it's not easy to get there, it's easier to get there and harder to stay because the mental part comes in as a young kid because you're always worried about, okay, if I go through a couple-week stretch that I'm not doing well, am I going to get sent back to the minor leagues? And that's the toughest thing is a lot of guys do get sent to the minor leagues, and it's hard for them to stay. And then also as you get older or you get established, it's always overcoming those times you don't do well. You know, as a reliever, as a pitcher, and even everyone, you always have to have a short memory and kind of forget about what you did the night before, even though that's easier said, it's really tough to do. I lost a lot of sleep on some of the games that I didn't do well and went to the park tired the next day, but knew I needed to get in there and, you know, try to, I guess, redeem myself. So I guess it is, you know, it is a huge mental game and, you know, it depends on what city you're playing in, but, you know, like New York, it's really tough because of the fans and the media about they're really hard on you and really expect everything 100% all the time. So if you're not that way, you know, it's tough, but I think this game, you know, you got to realize that you're going to fail at one point, and it's the times when you do fail how you get over them.
Were you always a relief pitcher, or did you start at any point during your career?
I started all in the minor leagues, and my last year in the minor leagues, it came to me probably because I didn't last. You know, I'd have a couple complete games, but my velocity was always high for the first three innings, and all of a sudden it dropped, and then also I was able to come back and pitch. You know, I didn't feel any problems the next day, even after I started. So I started for the first 6 years in the minors, and my last year in the minor leagues, I closed.
That can always be ego-crushing in a sense. Was it a little bit easier for you because you were realistic with yourself about what your abilities were?
It was because they said, hey, if you don't want to start, then you better start looking for another job. So it's okay. Hey, I'll do anything I can to get to the major league. So I relieved, and you know, everything came together. It's almost like you look back and wish I would have done it sooner.
Tell me about coming up with Seattle back in 1992, that first time you came up to the majors.
Well, that was the one thing, you know, I in spring training of that year in 92, I went down. I had a good spring, but I got sent down. And then 3 days later into the season, somebody got hurt and they called me up. And, you know, the pitching coach actually is the Mets pitching coach, Dan Worthen. And Bill Plummer was the manager. The one thing I told you before about mental, about, oh, you're always worried about looking over your back and over your shoulder. If you don't do well, you're going to get sent down. They came to me right away and said, you know what, relax, and you're not going anywhere. You're going to be here the rest of the year. I think they pretty much knew we weren't going to have a good team, and they just wanted me to get my feet wet. And I think I wound up pitching in, like, 68 games. And, you know, it was easier for me as far as knowing that, hey, if I threw together, if I didn't do well for a first couple, or, you know, a week stretch or a couple games in a row, that I wasn't going anywhere.
Did you have to take on a particular persona being a successful relief pitcher? Now, I say that because if you think of Goose Gossage, and I've talked to Trevor Hoffman a number of times, and he said what you said a little bit earlier, you got to have a short memory, but also you almost have to have an arrogance about yourself because you're coming in an unknown situation. If you're a starter, you know Jeff as well as I do, you know that every fifth day you're going to get handed the ball and you can get yourself ready for it. But as a reliever, you don't have a clue about when you're going into the game usually.
No, you don't. Fortunately, I was a seventh, eighth inning guy and also the ninth inning guy. When we were my first year, it was really, you know, just the excitement of me putting all those years into my legs and finally getting up. to the big leagues, and I wanted to establish myself. And I had to, you know, I learned from Randy Johnson my first couple years in Seattle, and watched how he pitched. And he told me, he said, "Listen, if you're going to have success here, you better learn how to pitch inside. Learn not to have any fear. And if you hit someone, you hit someone. But you have to own the inside part of the plate, or these guys are going to own you." It was a different game back then. I mean, guys threw inside more. The umpires didn't take that away. You had to earn your respect, you know, with the umpires. You had to earn your respect for your teammates. And that was one thing that I wanted to do. I dropped down like three quarters. I had a big slider, and I needed to come inside. And I wasn't afraid to hit anyone. It wasn't usually on purpose, but I wasn't afraid if I came inside and I missed and happened to hit the guy, I had to get the next guy out. So I wanted to make sure that once I got there, I stayed. And, you know, Randy Johnson was a huge, huge help with me. And just watching those type of pitchers, and even, you know, watching guys like David Cohn when he was with the Royals, and other, you know, Roger Clemens when he was with the Red Sox and the Blue Jays, and he was my teammate in New York. But I learned from those guys how they pitched and how they owned the plate. And I said, well, for me to stick around, I got to do the same thing.
At 6'8", you were certainly one of the tallest players in Major League Baseball, and Randy Johnson also up in that range as well. And I'm just wondering about the mechanics. Are they discernibly different, Jeff, being that tall than they are somebody who's 6'6", 6'1"?
Well, they can go out of whack easier. You know, you can't, it's, you know, for tall guys, it's harder to repeat their delivery. You know, you try to keep it simple. That's easier said, but you try to keep it simple. I had a little turn in my wind up, and my main thing is I had to stay, you know, balanced over the rubber, so I was able to get the ball down. And, you know, arm slot, you know, you try to keep the same arm slot. Smaller guys, it was a little bit easier, you know, because there's not a lot of moving parts. You don't have to lift your leg up real high. I mean, look at Randy for the first few years. I mean, his walk total was really high, and until he finally dialed it in, and you know, he was able to repeat his delivery and get more consistent. Well, it was the same with me.
You know, you mentioned about playing in New York as well as Seattle. You're talking about a dichotomy there, one in the Northwest where when I was up there as a sportscaster, you know, it was tucked away there. Sometimes they didn't even report the scores on the Eastern papers. And then you go to New York, which is the focus, the spotlight on almost all of sports there. Tell me a little bit, was it a little bit mind-blowing for you?
It was a little bit, but I grew up in Baltimore, so I grew up on the East Coast. So it wasn't as bad. You know, I loved pitching in New York. I loved pitching in that atmosphere. Even as a visitor, it never really felt intimidating. You know, being out in Seattle my first few years, you know, I was just happy to be in the big leagues. And then after a while, you know, 95, we had that great season that we went to the first division. I mean, we won the division, came back from that big deficit from the Angels, and then we wound up playing in that great division series against the Yankees. I just loved pitching in New York and loved pitching on the East Coast. And that atmosphere never really intimidated me. It was more like I used it as a positive for myself. I mean, they would get on you, and then they would throw stuff at you. But you know what? It was fun atmosphere.
Yeah, was the atmosphere out in Seattle a little bit more laid back?
Yeah, it was, because, you know, nothing. It was funny because you go to New York and you have 25 to 30 media members, and they're hawking you and got the rabbit ears on all over the clubhouse. And out in Seattle, my first few years, I mean, we had three or four media guys that would cover us. Well, two of those media guys would dress out in shorts and T-shirt and be shagging and fly balls during early BP until, you know, the whole team reported. So that's how laid back it was. I mean, all they wanted to do was write good stories. And it was an easy city. They didn't really know baseball as well. I mean, now they are. I think after 95, the expectation level, you know, rose a little bit, and they started understanding the game a little bit. I mean, before, I mean, you know what, it's just fun to take the kids out to the Kingdome or Safeco Field, and then and that was it. It was a lot different than the East Coast.
Mentioned about the Kingdome, and that was a facility that I was there when it was erected, and it was just kind of a dead atmosphere. It never did lend itself to baseball in my mind. Was that a hard thing to adjust to when you were pitching in that facility?
No, I didn't mind because, you know, the weather in Seattle is not that great, and it doesn't get good until maybe July, you know, in August. And you get a few days that, you know, even when you're playing a baseball game at 10 o'clock, you still go outside in the summertime and it's still light out. The weather was consistent. That's the one thing for a pitcher for me. I liked it because it was always 70-some degrees and it was inside. I didn't mind pitching there. You know, and it was dead, but it was my first few years. I was to be in the big leagues. And in 95, those last couple months, you know, when we started filling out and we went to the playoffs, it was by far the loudest place I ever played.
Well, if 1995 was a good year, 2001 was an extraordinary year. And I remember watching that year. You held opposing batters to a 136 batting average. And, of course, the Mariners set or tied a Major League Baseball record for most wins in a regular season with 116-46. What was it that was the catalyst of that season, Jeff? I mean, that's an extraordinary record.
It was. You know, if you go back and you name some of the starting pitchers that were on that team, you were like, who are they? You know, you don't have a dominant guy. But, I mean, we had probably one of the best chemistry teams as far as how everybody got along. They pulled for each other. You just had a blast every single day you went to the park. And, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. wasn't there. Alex Rodriguez wasn't there. We had guys that had career years. Brett Boone, you had Jay Buhner, Edgar Martinez, Dan Wilson. You can probably name more of the lineup than you could the pitching staff. And we had a great bullpen. I mean, we had 8 all-stars. Our manager was there. One of our trainers was there. It was in Seattle. You know, we didn't lose a series that whole entire year until we came back after 9/11. And, you know, it was just one of those years that, no matter if we were down or up, we knew that we were going to win. And once we stepped between the lines, guys had fun. And you know, I think that was the most important thing, that, you know, every day that we went out, I think everybody challenged each other. And that was one thing that you don't find on a lot of teams.
Let me ask you about two of the managers you played for, Lou Piniella up in Seattle and Joe Torre in New York. Any similarities between those two guys? Did they approach the game the same way, or were they a dichotomy from each other?
Well, you know what, they approached the game the same way as far as they wanted to win. Now, the intensity level was definitely shown a little bit more in Lou. I mean, you talk about Seattle and New York, about the two different cities. Well, that's as far as mentality-wise, as far as, like, I guess the way they express themselves, that's the way, you know, Joe Torre was more like a Seattle atmosphere. He did all his stuff behind the scenes. If you had a problem, he's calling you in the office. Great guy to play for. You know, great manager, really, you know, he knew who was going to help him win, and I'm glad I was one of those guys. And Lou was, you know, very intense, and he showed his emotions. He wasn't afraid to show it in front of the team in the clubhouse, and he expected 100% out of you, and he knew that this game wasn't a kid's game, and he expected it right away. And if he didn't, he would never show you up, but his emotions would, it was almost like you were almost, if you didn't do well, you were afraid of him. But I respected him again because he used me all the time, and I think he made me, you know, out in Seattle, made me stronger as far as mentally when I went to New York, knowing that, you know, this isn't a kid's game. I got to come in and it's all about winning, and he made sure that everybody knew that. And the intensity level was high, and I think he helped me when I went to play for Joe.
One of the observations that I have, and I may be wrong about this, but you picked up 4 championship rings, 96, 98, 99, and 2000. Joe
right.
Torre, the manager there, and I always felt that part of the reason for the team's success is that he was a great buffer with his personality between all the things with management and ownership and everything that goes around the club. He was one of those steadying forces. You always felt he was the captain on the bridge of the ship. Am I correct in that observation?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that's one of the things that made him such a great manager is that, you know, when I mentioned that all the media members, well, you know, it's easy for a manager to say, you know what, I have no idea, go out there and ask the players. Well, he made it easy for us to go out there and do our best and perform and not worry about the media jumping all over us. He deflected that. He deflected the ownership. You know, Mr. Steinbrenner was a very intense owner, and it would show his emotions through the paper or if he came down the clubhouse, if he was ever in New York. And you're right, he was able to take that and take all the outside pressures away from us, knowing that it was tough to play in New York. And we were a great team as far as everybody got along and everybody had the same goal. Once we stepped in between the lines, it was all about going to the World Series. And he took out all outside distractions and let us go out and perform at our best.
In about 30 seconds, is there a particular memory you have on your career, Jeff, that's kind of ingrained in your mind?
Let's see, the 2000 World Series when we played the Mets is by far my most memorable because it's just two teams in one city and just watching, you know, houses and families get separated because of who they wanted to root for. And then making the All-Star team in 2001.
Jeff, I want to thank you very much. I really enjoyed watching your 15-year career and the success that you had with particularly the New York Yankees in those 4 championship rings. Thank you for joining us on Sports Byline and congratulations on your induction into the Irish American Baseball Hall of Fame. Take care, my friend.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
Take care. Jeff Nelson with us again, 15 years in the majors with Seattle, the New York Yankees, Texas Rangers, and the Chicago White Sox. We continue with more of you and Sports Byline.